Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Phil Cook grew up in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and relocated to North Carolina about 20 years ago to pursue what's become a prolific career as a musician. From his time in the group Megaphon with his brother Brad, to collaborating with his childhood friend Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, Phil's become known as a great guitarist, vocalist, and songwriter with a mastery of style and substance. But Phil's first true love was the piano, and life has brought him back to the piano for a collection of solo instrumentals titled Appalachia Borealis. Listening to the record brings you right into the room with Phil, like you're sitting on a nearby couch with the window cracked, birds singing outside. Steve Gotcher sat down with Phil to talk about how the more humble sound of his upright piano suits the mood of these songs and his style of playing.
There's an intimacy to the way that I play the piano at home. It's become a meditative spiritual practice for me. It's really a healing mechanism and it's a language for me. So I need that feedback of really feeling the hammers, feeling the strings coming right back at me. So I like the intimacy of an upright piano. And what I think it does is it brings the intimacy of a living room into your living room. You're not in a concert hall.
Yeah.
And so that's how I want the record to feel. I want it to feel really close to you because it is very personal to me, and I want it to feel personal to the listener.
Wow, and you accomplished that in spades, the spirituality, the intimacy. That was the vibe I got the first time I listened to it. How did you manage to dial in that vibe?
There's a few ways to answer that question. There's an approach that I've developed now. When I reacquainted myself with the piano, I had a lesson with a gospel piano player who is an MD at a really big Baptist church in town. He's also a jazz player. And it was edifying for one simple fact. He had me play for him, and he just, when I finished, he simply asked me, "Why do you use the sustain pedal so much?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "I want to challenge you to like stop using it." And I said, "Okay." He said, "I know we know how to use it, but when you take away the net, you really find out how you play." So if I want to hold something, I have to hold it. If I want to like run something, I can run it. But taking away the pedal allows me to do both. While engaging the pedal, everything's going to sustain that I play. Every string resonates sympathetically in some way, shape, or form. And we've become so accustomed to that. I have too. Any piano recording, all the strings are somewhat resonating the whole time. You can hear it when you just push it down without hitting anything. Boom, you can just hear it. You take that away, everything shrinks in. And that has helped me express myself. So when I hold something in the treble clef or something in the middle that I want to sing, everything can dance around it. But if that one thing sings through and holds, it's allowed me to sing on this instrument in a way that I never have.
Yeah. And you have said that the time that you were recording this record was a challenging time for you personally. How did that influence this recording?
So to answer it best, I can just tell you that my family has navigated a divorce. I've been through a divorce in the last 3 years. And that was the whole time I was writing this record. You know, my kids having to live in two different homes. Mm-hmm. It involved, you know, a lot of healing, a lot of regathering, and a lot of reassessing what matters to me most. So I found myself living in the country, taking a lot of long walks and going in the woods. And then I'm sitting one day in my bed, there's a willow tree outside my window. And I can just hear that there is a mockingbird sitting 5 feet from my head, and it's just going off. So I quietly open up my window, and I put my phone on the edge of the windowsill, and I just recorded about 15 minutes of this like dawn chorus. And it was just a really sweet moment. And I got to my studio that day. I put on that recording in my headphones here. And this profound thing happened, Steve. I was like, all of a sudden, I'm in this sanctuary that I go to every day in the woods, and the world is falling away. I'm falling away. And in that space, I wrote 3 songs in one day with the birds just in my ears. And they set this scene that's so beautiful. Like, they have their own rhythm, they have their own cadence. And it felt like I wasn't alone, but it also felt super intimate. So then I just realized, oh, I'm just taking that sanctuary and I'm laying it on top of this sanctuary that I have in the piano. And that became a healing space for me.
Let's back up a little bit and talk about your growing up in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. What role did music play in your family, and how were you first introduced to the piano?
We had an upright piano like in my living room, and my dad is a piano player. So my dad grew up playing piano. He knew he can read sheet music, but he also plays by ear. So my dad's a great natural musician. And then Chippewa Falls itself, I mean, it was 12,000 people growing up. And when I really found that piano, it was like right in the throes of puberty, all the confusion, the piano was there for me. And it was just this place where I could put all that confusion and everything I was enduring. And I just really began to fall in love with my dad's record collection. He had great records. And so I would put on records and CDs and anything I could find, and I would just try and figure things out, you know?
Yeah. So your musical resume is pretty big. In addition to the piano, you're a great vocalist, a guitarist, a banjo player, and you've played in bands like Megafon and D'Armond Edison. You've released solo records that cover folk and rock and blues and gospel, and you've collaborated with Bon Iver, His Golden Messenger, and a whole bunch of others. After all that, what drew you back to the piano and composing solo instrumental music?
When I look back on my 20s and 30s and really moving to North Carolina, playing in all these different bands, being a session player, learning how to lead my own band, learning multiple instruments, and being out in the public and on tour pretty much for almost 15 years, that was a very outside-in process. You know, it was very externally validating, which was great, but there was a big imbalance at the core of my life. And the piano really represents like that really core piece of me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing I like to say is, you know, as a white guy with glasses, I've been in a lot of places and spaces, but sometimes I kind of feel like white dudes should be thinking about making a little bit more instrumental music these days.
I like that. That's good. So one of the centerpieces of the record is your innovative reinterpretation of Gillian Welch's song, I Made a Lover's Prayer. What's your connection to this song, and why did you decide to include this one?
Well, it's a great question. 2 years ago, I got back. I did one small tour for my first piano record all these years. It was in Wisconsin. And when I got back from that, I just felt like, you know, I'm 43 years old. I think it's probably time that I actually owned a piano. I've had keyboards, I've had thrift store pianos, but as a composer on piano, if this is what I'm doing, I better get a piano. So I found a family piano shop in Raleigh, North Carolina. Great people, Mouse Piano. And I found a beautiful Yamaha U3 there. And I just sat down at it. I just played for like 4 hours. And while I'm sitting there playing, I just kind of got into this rhythm, and then I just started playing that song. And I don't know why Gillian Welch was in my head that day. I love that song.
Now, when you were ready to record this record, you went to April Bass Studio just outside of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, near Fall Creek. It's the studio of Bon Iver's Justin Vernon and has become a destination for artists from all around the world. What's special about April Bass to you?
Well, you know, Justin and I grew up and really learned how to play music together. All my core memories of music, he's right there by my side. So when he found all the success that he had, he made this big investment in this studio. And I can't even tell you the number of records that I've made there over the last almost 20 years. And so I have a lot of memories in that studio. So I knew I wanted to make this record with, I just wanted to find a special piano. And in order for me to go there, I really need to like be at my full agency without any self-consciousness, no self-awareness, not everything has to kind of fall away. And a friend that's been in your corner that long, that sees you for you, loves you for you, accepts you for you, that's the kind of space I'm talking about. So when I asked Justin if he would produce, he said, yes, what do you picture me doing? And I said, I need you to just hold the space and let me go where I gotta go. And then I need you to just listen. And then when it's done, I need you to go through and take notes and just say, these are the moments I feel like the most you that I know you to be on the instrument. And he made like the kind of greatest hits list, because we had about 100 recordings to go through that I made in 2 days. So.
And you kept the recording process pretty simple and experimented with feeding the bird songs into your headphones as you played. What kind of effect did that have?
I think I had 5 or 6, and they're just voice memo recordings from my phone. But I had 5 or 6 that I gave to the engineer, and I said, hey, will you play one of the bird recordings into my ear? And I had pre-made it as a loop that was like 15 minutes long, so I could just be in it for a while. Because I knew some of the recordings that I had written and some of the compositions I had, I wrote them with those birds. So like the wood thrush song, that's from a forest in Orange County, North Carolina. That's the song that goes with that environment and that bird. So I need those. I need the birds in my headphone to actually perform it. Like in order for me to play it with the right, in the right rhythm and cadence, I have to have the birds.
Right. So would you consider the birds collaborators?
100%. I mean, I feel like in a way I'm really collaborating with them. You know, they're setting the tone, they're setting the pace, and my reactions and how I'm playing, even like the wood thrush song is in E flat. It's in E flat because, you know, when the wood thrush says E flat sounds the best with that. You know, so they're really dictating where I'm going and what I'm doing. So I absolutely am humbled to be collaborating with the birds. Yeah.
The title track, Appalachia Borealis, you have the sound of a loon calling in the distance. And you said you couldn't have written this song as a young man. Why is that?
Well, I just played too much when I was a young man. You hear people with a lot of virtuosity that can really just like dazzle. And I chased that for a while, and I realized that I have some limitations there. And so then I heard like Bill Frisell, and you realize there's just different paths of like how to get feeling and a mood across directly to the heart of the listener. And so to me, it was like, I needed to like go through a lot of life. And so with Appalachia Borealis, all the things I was navigating personally, it was a rainy day when I wrote it. It was like pouring rain, you know, like the mood was set, man. It was there. And I was really missing Wisconsin and home. And I had a recording from the cabin that my family's owned for 115 years. I had a recording of some loons on the lake. And that day, I put those loons on.
It's an amazing sound.
It is an amazing sound. And when you hear them, you know, when there's the chains of lakes, sometimes you'll even be able to hear them call, and you'll hear it echo over the lake, and then you'll hear loons from a different lake call back. They just feel what they're doing. They can really feel the resonance of their call. So yeah, so that really contains like the most sacred place on earth for me, you know, that cabin.
Thank you. Phil Cook, thanks so much for this conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you on the road.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you all for having me. Thanks for listening.
Find out more about Phil Cook and his latest album, Appalachia Borealis, at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Joseph Patel, Sarah Sligar, and Phil Cook.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
It was created for WPR by yours truly and Adam Friedrich.
Who's responsible for this unwarranted attack on my person?
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
1, 2, 3, 3.
Our executive producer is Brad Kohlberg. And thanks to you, our Alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Well, so long.